I'd like to introduce Joe Orsi, who works for the NOAA, as a principal investigator with the Southeast Coastal Monitoring Project, examining relationships among climate, regional, and basin scale indices and salmon production in Southeast Alaska. Joe's talk today is Chinook Salmon Insights from Marine Ecosystem Monitoring in Southeast Alaska.
Thank you, Eric and Bob, for inviting me to speak at this symposium. It's a privilege and honor to be here. So I'm going to try to talk to Chinook Salmon Insights from Marine Ecosystem Monitoring in Southeast Alaska. For my talk, I will touch on some past research studies that we've conducted and give you some insights relative to Chinook salmon in the 1980s to the mid-90s. There's three studies there, and then I'll review our long-term Southeast Coastal Monitoring that Ed and Phil touched on. And then I'll summarize some selected findings on Chinook marine distribution, ecology, and production from all those studies and a couple new studies that just were published this year. And then finally, I'll try to identify future research needs to better understand Chinook production mechanisms. So in the mid-1980s, we were involved in purse seining for juvenile salmon with small mesh herring seines. It was a cooperative study with Oregon State University all the way from middle of Oregon to coastal Southeast Alaska, inside and outside waters. And as you can see, we weren't all that effective in sampling Chinook salmon. We had the 38 Chinook salmon out of 253 hulls. So given that poor success, Bill Hurd came up with a brainchild of using commercial salmon trawlers, chartering them, and then developing some small hooks and lures and using electrical anesthesia to process them. And that became an incredibly effective technique. We were able to sample over 5,800 Chinook salmon, recover 539 Cotowar tags from 135 charter days. And these are fish that are all sublegal. We'll call them pre-recruits. So they represent the age zero, the juvenile ocean age class, the age one ocean age class, and age two ocean age class. Because it's important to unravel the age structure of Chinook salmon when you're talking about their marine distribution. So with this study in 1986 and 87, we were able to look at the distribution of Chinook stocks in inside and coastal waters of Southeast Alaska in three regions, and we also looked at a seasonal distribution of the fish in two regions. We put out a paper in 1996 where we described seasonal stock-specific distributions of Alaska, British Columbia, and Washington, Oregon stocks from Cotowar tags, and they represented 74 stocks, and we identified Southeast Alaska as an important nursery area for pre-recruit Chinook salmon from up to 1,800 kilometers south. And this is the catch per unit effort of fish in the troll gear. This is the fish caught in inside waters, and this is the fish caught in outside waters. These are Alaskan stocks, British Columbia stocks, and Washington, Oregon stocks. A couple things I'll point out to you here is that the Alaskan stocks are mainly found in inside waters, and these are juveniles, age zero in September. And you can see they continue to persist in inside waters in both February and May as one ocean fish. And then they disappear, go somewhere, die or whatever, from that age on. And that's also happening in the outside waters. And then in contrast to that, you have after their first ocean year, the non-Alaskan component shows up in Southeast Alaska. And these are the fish that contribute to the Southeast Alaska Chinook fishery. Most of the fish caught in Southeast Alaska are non-Alaskan stocks, and us identifying these pre-recruits arriving here a couple years before they contribute was new information at the time. One other interesting fact is that some of these non-Alaskan stocks we were catching in September on the coast turned out to be Columbia River Basin stocks from upriver, and that was new information at the time. One thing we did with this troll gear, too, is we fished it at standard depths. We had five different spreads on each of the lines with identical gear, and we're able to evaluate marine distribution of Chinook salmon and contrast that with coho salmon, which is a species that we also caught. So you can see in this graph here that this shows that the largest Chinook salmon were found deepest and fish were shallow in May and deeper in winter. This is the fish fork length increment of the fish caught, and this is the mean depth of capture with an inverted axis. So this is 20 meters and this is 35 meters, and you can see that as the fish grow, they were distributed deeper and that they were shallowest in May and deepest in winter. We could also contrast the vertical distribution between Chinook and coho, and amongst all the age groups for Chinook salmon, these are the depth intervals where fish were captured, and this is shallow and this is deep, and this is the percent of the catch. And you can see in the green here that the juvenile coho were distributed shallower than the juvenile Chinook in purple, and the older age groups of juvenile Chinook, the one ocean and the two ocean fish, were even deeper than the juveniles. So there's partitioning going on between habitat among Chinook salmon age groups and between juvenile Chinook and coho. Another study we tried in the mid-1990s, was two-boat pair trawling that we conducted at night with a small Kodiak FRI trawl that was basically fished at the surface, 3 meters deep, 6 meters wide, 10-minute hauls, and out of 225 hauls, we again were not very successful at sampling Chinook salmon, only 20 Chinook. And most recently, we've been involved with the Southeast Coastal Monitoring Project, where we've consistently sampled June, July, and August over 16 years from 1997 onward. And that gear is, as Ed described, it's a rope trawl, fished at the surface, head ropes floating. It's 20 meters deep, and we fish it for 20 meters at a haul, day fishing, and cover about 1 nautical mile of sampling. And in summary, we've sampled about 1,400 hauls over those years and all the habitats and what have you, and we've sampled about 1,300 Chinook salmon. And if you break those down by ocean age group, they're about 60% juvenile or ocean age zero and about 40% ocean age one. So what do we learn from this study? We were out there sampling these stations. We looked at the physical data, the profile data from temperature, salinity, zooplankton biomass from plankton net sampling, looking at the diet of the different species, looked at catch per unit effort, looked at size and growth, energy density, size at time, looked at stock composition based on cotoar tags and otoliths. And this is pink chum sockeye, and these are Chinook and coho. And you can see that they tend to be larger and they're more piscivorous, as you'll see, than the more planktivorous pink chum sockeye. And predation, finally, any predator we catch in the net, we would open up their stomachs and see what they're eating. And I'll tell you right now that we have yet to identify a predator for juvenile Chinook salmon or coho salmon, but we have identified predators for pink chums and sockeye. So one of the first questions we wanted to ask ourselves during the first 4 years of the study was, what is the distribution of these different species of salmon? We learned from the troll studies that there were seasonal distribution patterns, and we want to try to flesh that out with this rope trawling. So we sampled three different habitats: coastal habitat near the Gulf of Alaska, strait habitat near the only migration corridor in northern southeast Alaska, Icy Strait, and finally inshore habitat near Juneau here on the mainland coast, where a lot of the wild Chinook production is going on. And the questions we were asking were, was there differential habitat used by species, and were there seasonal signals from May to September on any of those species? And here's what we found, and this is just kind of a busy graph, sorry about that. This is the inshore habitat, strait habitat, coastal habitat, and I've circled the Chinook proportion of catch over time, and you can see this is May, June, July, and August in each one of these habitats. You can see that in May, we didn't catch any juvenile salmon species, and that's because what Phil and Ed were alluding to earlier is early on, these juveniles are very nearshore oriented and they haven't grown large enough to make an offshore migration and being available to our surface trawl gear, which is fished roughly from 4 kilometers to 60 kilometers offshore. But one thing you do see is that Chinook salmon have different distribution patterns than all the other species in all the habitats. You can see in the inshore habitat that they have kind of a protracted distribution pattern where their abundance is relatively similar among the months. In the strait habitat, you can see that their abundance increases over time and peaks in September, like we saw with the troll gear, if you remember that study. And then in the coastal habitat, we see that the fish just peaked in June, and then they dropped off. And the interesting thing about this was these fish ended up being Columbia River Basin stocks that had been migrating like 900 kilometers per month, or about 30 kilometers per day, as an 8-inch, 200-millimeter fish. So some of these stocks make incredible migrations, but a lot of these Alaskan stocks appear not to. So basically, juvenile salmon, of the juvenile Chinook salmon, of the juvenile salmon catch, make up about a half of 1% in our CECUM surveys. So we wanted to take a look at, up and down the coast, what composition does Chinook comprise when you look at all the species combined that are caught in the upper water column. So in 2005, here in Anchorage, during the annual AFS meeting, we had a symposium where we looked at the ecology of juvenile salmon in the North Pacific Ocean and published this book here. And the chapter that I looked at, I was responsible for, was the epipelagic fish assemblages associated with juvenile Pacific salmon in the neritic waters of the California Current and the Alaska Current. Kind of a fancy way of saying what were the fish in the upper water column over the continental shelf. And basically what happens here with the North Pacific Current is it flows eastward, hits the western coast of North America, it bifurcates, forms the southern branch, which is the California Current, and a northern branch, which is the Alaska Coastal Current. And what we wanted to do was look at the distribution of juvenile salmon in both of these current systems. So we looked at daytime surface trawls in two different habitats, coastal inshore habitat, and two different time periods over a five-year period. And the sampling included 1.6 million fish and squid that represented 52 families and 118 species. And our major finding was the Chinook amounted to a very small numeric composition of the catch. It was a little bit higher in the California Current, in the Alaska Coastal Current, in some cases 20-fold. But in the Alaska Current, the highest percentage of abundance was basically 1/100 of 1% of the fish catch. So the Chinook are interacting with a lot of species potentially out there in the marine environment. And you might ask, well, what are they feeding? And Ed showed pictures of the high amount of fish prey, which is what we see in southeast Alaska. Molly Sturden gave me a couple studies here and provided this graphic for me that shows the percentage of prey items by category, and we grouped it into two different areas, the fish prey and the invertebrate prey. And you can see that as juveniles, and I'm contrasting Chinook and coho because, again, they are very piscivorous as juveniles, whereas the other species are more planktivorous. So both the juvenile Chinook and coho eat about 50% fish prey as juveniles. And then as immature Chinook and adult coho, it bumps up to about 90% fish prey. And just to identify a few of these important prey categories, one component is the lanternfish or the myctophids, which are deep water forage fish that have photophores on their bodies. We catch them sometimes in the plankton nets down to 200 meters, and these fish are eating those deep water forage fish. Also, capelin, another prey item Ed alluded to in the Bering Sea that are important. They're a cold water forage fish. You tend to see them during cold years. And then you have sand lance, herring, I think, and gadids or pollock. Those are important prey items. So one of the things that Phil mentioned is our ability to forecast salmon returns, and we've been able to do that by our consistent monitoring in the northern region of southeastern Alaska. And basically, of the stations that we've sampled historically, we focus on these eight stations in Icy Strait, which is an important migration corridor for juvenile salmon. And there's our relationship up until this last year. And we just had the numbers from this past year's harvest, and they're, again, very consistent with our CPUE of juveniles. And we provide a forecast model to the stakeholders meeting for the Per Se's Task Force meeting every year for the last 9 years. And in eight of the last 9 years, our absolute deviation, our accuracy, has been within 8% of the actual harvest, which is pretty remarkable. Although 1 year, the ninth year, our accuracy was not too great, and that was the 2005 ocean year, which was the warmest year that we've seen in southeastern Alaska. So you can see that between the Bering Sea and southeastern Alaska, warm years might mean two different things. And this graph here shows the temperature anomaly, the higher than normal temperatures that we saw in 2005 in July as the fish were entering the ocean. And this might be kind of a black swan event or whatever. I heard it called yesterday. But we just happened to be doing a study out there on with another vessel looking at diel distribution of salmon, rockfish, sablefish. And what we caught out there was quite surprising, more of a holy cow experience. We ended up sampling Humboldt squid, Pacific sardines, and blue sharks out there, things you normally don't see in the eastern Gulf of Alaska in early August. So we think it was a later summer mortality event that may have impacted that year class strength. So what does this have to do with Chinook salmon? Well, last week I decided to do some exploratory data analysis looking at our CPUE data on juvenile Chinook, lagged by brood year 2 years later, and age one immatures, lagged by brood years 3 years later, our abundance in Icy Strait compared to three different wild stocks of Chinook in southeast Alaska and three different hatchery stocks, Little Port Walter, Hidden Falls, Douglas Island, the Stikine River, Chilkat River, and Taku River. And the ones that are dark I've highlighted because they're more distant compared to the Icy Strait sampling area than these stocks here that are more proximal or closer to the Icy Strait area. And here's what I surprisingly found. There was a lot of positive correlations, and two of them were, in fact, significant, that both the Taku River as juveniles and the Douglas Island Pink and Chum as immatures. And interestingly enough, the poorest correlations within this cluster of six wild stocks were the more distant Stikine River stock, and then the Little Port Walter hatchery stock had the weakest correlations in this cluster of hatchery stocks. So taking a little closer look at that Taku River relationship between our average juvenile catch, we explained 43% of the variation with that one factor alone. And this only encompasses to the 2007 juvenile ocean year. So just for the heck of it, I thought I'd throw up what our juvenile catch rates were 5 years after that, because you have such a long brood year cycle for Chinook salmon, you don't know this information until later. Well, if you believe this relationship is going to hold true for the next 5 years, we're looking at one good year followed by three bad years, and then one mediocre year. So what have we learned about Chinook salmon in southeast Alaska? The catch rates are low, with many sampling techniques, and they numerically represent a very small fraction of both the juvenile salmon species and the total fish catch. A multitude of stocks occur in southeast Alaska. Most all move northward from their release locality, and some are year-round residents, and they migrate northward from distant localities, particularly as ocean age one fish. Many southeast stocks have a limited early migrations, as evidenced by protracted seasonal habitat use, which is in contrast to the Columbia River stocks, basin stocks that are highly migratory. And they have a deep vertical distribution. They're different than the other juvenile salmon species. They're larger and older fish are deeper, and seasonally they're deepest in winter. And we've looked at some underwater photography of fish as they entered the trawl, and you could really see the difference between adults and juveniles as they came into the cod end. The juveniles were on top of the adults, and they were displaying completely different behaviors. Juvenile Chinook salmon have habitat-specific seasonal migration patterns, and they're very piscivorous, and they're important. Fish prey include capelin, herring, sand lance, gadids, and lanternfish. And that Chinook salmon CPUE shows promise as a tool for indexing Chinook salmon year class strength for some stock groups. And finally, that there's long-term ecosystem monitoring on a seasonal basis is what's really allowed us to detect these biological signals. You know, if we didn't go out there and sample from May till September for 5 years, we wouldn't have been able to see when these critical periods were to be sampling. So I want to emphasize that. So the two recent studies that have come out on marine distribution in Chevalier Chinook, I wanted to bring to your attention because I think one of them was talked about yesterday. We didn't have any information, and I'll get to that one. But the first one is this redefined description of essential fish habitat for Pacific salmon within the U.S. Exclusive Economic Zone that just came out by Katie Achave. This is an Alaska distribution of fish. And in this volume, Tech Memo, she shows that this data is derived just from research fishing, going all the way back from Hartendale when they did their purse seining in the 60s and 70s to some of the later purse seining done and all the rope trawling done in Bering Sea and Gulf of Alaska and so on and so forth. But basically it shows that 95% of the juvenile distribution of Chinook salmon is occurring inshore here on the continental shelf. And if you contrast that with immatures, these would be one ocean, two ocean fish, and later, those fish are more offshore distributed in the on the Aleutian chain there and western Gulf of Alaska and in the Bering Sea. The other study that just came out was by Sharma et al. It's relating spatial and temporal scales of climate and ocean variability to survival of Pacific Northwest Chinook salmon. And in this study, they examined smolt-to-adult survival from 22 Chinook salmon groups from the Pacific Northwest to Southeast Alaska. And they found that ocean survival grouped into 8 distinct geographic clusters and that Chinook survival covaried on a spatial scale of 350 to 450 kilometers. And their conclusion was local ocean conditions following smolt outmigration had a significant effect on survival for most stock groups. So what's the big picture here? You know, what research do we need to better understand marine production mechanisms for Chinook salmon? Is it as simple as just looking at juvenile abundance and then maybe mapping out a better picture of immature distribution that will eventually get us adult production? Or do we need to be monitoring these other things like climate, the prey, the predators, competitors? And like I say, we have still not identified a predator of juvenile salmon, Chinook salmon. So what do I think the future marine research direction should be for Chinook salmon? Well, I think we need to continue to monitor ecosystems that are adjacent to these index stocks seasonally, and that will enable us to identify stock-specific marine patterns, migration patterns. For example, you know, do the northern Chinook stocks have this protracted early marine migrations that a lot of the southeast stocks have? Or are there two different life history categories, like on the Columbia River? You know, are the upriver fish making more distant migrations than the lower river fish? This could be true of the Yukon River. And another example would be, do western Alaskan Chinook salmon migrate seasonally like Japanese chum stocks, which from otolith marks, they can determine that the Japanese fish come on over to they summer in Bristol Bay and they winter in the Gulf of Alaska and they seesaw back and forth across those domains, and then when they mature, they go back. You know, do Chinook do that, or do they do a circuitous long-term 5-year migration out in the ocean somewhere and come back? You know, to model these things, we have to know where they're at. And then we need to do a better job of investigating these trophic linkages. You know, is it top-down processes or is it a bottom-up? You know, I don't think we're doing a very good job of identifying the predators. And, you know, these food webs are important, these dynamics to understand. You know, what's controlling the capelin abundance, the myctophid abundance? You know, are there any stock assessments on those important prey species that can be linked with Chinook survival? And that's another thing, just to continue to explore some of these metrics like I started to do with the CPUE data on our Chinook salmon. I'll try to, you know, use other parameters to see if they correspond with the broodier survivals for Chinook salmon as they become developed. And lastly, I think it's a good idea to maintain collaboration among researchers. It's really been fruitful to have workshops like and symposiums like this where researchers can get together and put out publications that try to summarize our state of the knowledge on different aspects of juvenile salmon ecology. And lastly, thanks to the survey collaboration, especially the last 3 years we've had people from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game researchers, Alaska University of Alaska, our Northwest Fishery Science Center folks, and people from Southern Southeast Regional Aquaculture Association that have accompanied us on the surveys, and that's really important, and we really appreciate that support. And although I'm not holding the biggest fish in this picture, it is a Chinook, so I just wanted to show you that. And that's all I have. Thank you for your attention.
This is Jim Murphy. Joe, at the beginning you presented the different gear types that have been used in Southeast Alaska and showed kind of some of the success of those gear types for sampling Chinook. And I'm just wondering, based on some of the catches of Chinook, how much is that is strictly a function of the gear type and how much of it is the objectives of the survey that were conducted with those gear types?
Okay, good question. Yeah, the effectiveness of that reduced size troll gear is depth is basically it'll catch Chinook down to about 15 centimeters, but we feel that about 20 centimeters is really the lower end of where you catch most of the fish. So there is some size selectivity on the bottom end of it, and on the other end, you know, the older fish, the age two fish, the pre recruits, which are still under 20 inches legal length, we didn't do a very good job of sampling the older fish because our hooks would straighten when we caught the big fish. So on both the lower end and the upper end, there was some selectivity going on. But as far as, you know, addressing our objectives of trying to understand these stock-specific migration patterns, I think it did a pretty good job of, you know, indexing those major stock groups and allow us to, you know, get a picture of what, you know, these movement patterns are by habitat and season.
Now, this is Jim. Maybe I could just clarify that again. My point is, I think the troll survey, was that not designed specifically to study Chinook, whereas some of your purse seine sampling was more of probably directed more towards pink and chums. And I'm just wondering what whether that had a big effect on your catch composition or not.
Yeah, absolutely, Jim. The troll gear is a very selective, species selective. It's almost all Chinook and coho, and whereas the purse seine and the rope trawls catch everything, and there's not a size effect with the rope trawl, although you could make a case that it's not very effective on the older immatures and the adults because, like I was mentioning earlier, our underwater photography, actually looking at the fish as they come into the cod end, you can see a big difference in the stress level of the fish that are falling back from the juveniles as opposed to the immatures and the adults. The adults just kind of swim around in circles there, whereas the juveniles are actually flaking back into the cod end. So, you know, depending on how long you tow, how fast you tow, all that should probably factor into what you're trying to target. But for our purposes in sampling juvenile salmon, I think our approach is good because we don't want to sample too much because we've had to, at times, limit our trawls from 20 minutes to 10 minutes because the abundance of salmon has been so high that we don't want to have excessive bycatches. So we've made adjustments like that.
Yeah, I'd just like to pick up a little bit on the – I'm sorry, Jim Iannelli. The theme of Chinook as integrators of the ecosystem conditions. And I wondered if you had any thoughts on building up a time series of biological samples or biological condition factors. For example, from the bycatch in the Bering Sea, we tend to pick up pretty much the similar sizes and ages of Chinook when they occur in the bycatch. And presently our focus is on just genetic samples and a bit on length frequency, which is obviously important. But I wonder if there's any value or you had any thoughts on the value of collecting additional information, tissue samples for condition factor and those types of things, with the idea that you'd have in 1 year you could understand something, but eventually building up a time series so that you could see how the conditions have changed for the Chinook.
Thank you. We do look at condition residuals of the fish. We look at their energy density. We look at the percent of the diet that is in the percentage of weight in the stomach compared to the weight of the fish. So we do look at some energetic conditions of the fish. One problem with Chinook salmon, of course, again, it gets back to their abundance. You know, that time series I show, and I forgot to mention this EDA, is that it only represents about 400 total Chinook in that comparison out of 500 hauls. You know, so over 11 years. So you're not dealing with very many fish per year, and that's, you know, spread across June, July, and August. So there's limited numbers of fish to use, but we do have other metrics we're looking at with Chinook, and I just haven't had time to relate that to corresponding, you know, brood year survivals of these stock groups. But I'll certainly, you know, explore that further next week.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks very much, Joe.